Hello everyone and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business and esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills, and for this week's episode, we are joined by the lovely ladies from The Story Mob, the first female-only esports business, which is specialised around all things comms and PR in the esports industry. To take us through their journey, we're joined by Anna Rozwandowicz and Nicola Pigott, who were two of the founding members of the business. Anna spent multiple years as the VP of comms with ESL, and Nicola was the comms lead for all things esports at Riot Games for 4 or 5 years as well. This is a really interesting area of the market. There aren't many businesses that are specializing here, but obviously when you have such a high turnover of new players, such global reach, a lot of exciting movements happening in the wonderful world of business, being on the ball and having all of your ducks in a row with regards to PR and comms is a crucial part of any part of the business. So without further ado, let's bring these two on the show. Anna and Nicola, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Yeah, thanks. Hello. Thanks for having us.
Cool. So before we dive into the wonderful story of how you guys got The Story Mob started, please take us through your stories in this industry. What kind of sparked the interest in esports in the first place, and what's your view for the future of your business? Whoever
sure,
wants to go
yeah.
first.
I'll kick off. So as you mentioned, I've been in gaming a little while, in esports specifically, for like a good 5-6 years now. But I started way back when in London, working in gaming and consumer comms. My first client was Sega. So I've worked in communications for a really long time. And what I'm seeing now, is, like, it feels for the very first time like I'm, you know, exactly where I need to be in terms of a new and developing industry. That's pretty rare, to be honest. Like, you normally jump on at sort of the tail end of a wave, or you're at something too early to make a significant difference. And esports to us feels like, you know, it's really gathering momentum in the best possible way for comms pros like ourselves. So So to answer your question about how the group came together, we can talk a little bit more about our origin story in a bit more detail once Anna's introduced herself. But really, you know, we came together based on the belief that esports needed good communications, and that we were the right people to offer it with our experience.
Awesome.
Yeah. Agree. Joe, this is Anna Rozwandowicz, so you almost got this right. I also have about 5 years background in esports. I've spent approximately 8 last years in gaming when I started my first PR job at Perfect World. So I launched Neverwinter, which was a wonderful game to work on. Still very fresh in my memory. Very much enjoyed it, but moved from Perfect World to News. Oh, what was the other way around? No, I think it was first News and then Perfect World. And then from there, I went to ESL. And only recently, I moved back to Amsterdam and joined Nicola and Kaylee, our third co-founder, in The Story Mob.
Awesome. There's been a huge amount of really positive PR around, one, you guys just making the move in the first place, but also some of the content that you guys have put out recently across a variety of channels. But help us understand, just in a snapshot, you know, what The Story Mob is and what you're looking to achieve / solve in the esports industry.
Sure, I can take a crack at this, and then Anna, feel free to correct me on anything I get wrong. So The Story Mob, in a nutshell, is the world's first PR and comms consultancy that's dedicated solely to esports. We're by no means the first comms pros to work in esports. You have in-house teams, you have bigger agencies who work sure. in gaming and dabble in esports, but we're the first people to put all of our eggs in that basket and focus solely on esports. Anna and I, obviously we worked together over a couple of years when I was at Riot and she was at ESL, specifically around the IEM brand. And we shared a lot of frustrations that we couldn't find partners that had the experience in esports that we wanted, comms partners that had the experience, but also had the passion for esports that we were looking for. We felt like there was a real gap in the market for experienced senior level pros who not only wanted to, you know, sort of do all the stuff that PR agencies are supposed to do, get great coverage and, you know, make people's words sound good, but also really wanted to like properly embed with their clients, you know, to help them tell the kind of stories that you see traditional sports orgs being able to tell, because they've had the benefit of like 200 years of a head start on us. So we believe at our core that esports fans are the most valuable audience in the world, and not just valuable in terms of how much money can you squeeze out of them, but valuable because they're so receptive, so passionate, so, you know, grounded in this love for competitive gaming, that we think that they are the best possible audience to tell great stories to, you know, stories of heroes and defeat and, you know, complex stories about how you put together a new sport in this post-internet world. And we, you know, we believe that we cared enough about the esports scene to tell those stories, and that working across multiple brands would allow us to do that. We were both, you know, pretty happy and pretty settled in our jobs when we met. And I think would have continued, you know, to do what we did for multiple years. But ultimately, it was just sort of a good confluence of events, the right partners, the right opportunities out there. We picked up some amazing clients that we've known for years right off the bat. And it really helped boost our confidence in what we're doing. And as we pick up more and more projects, we're more and more excited about, you know, opening up storytelling and good comms practices for each of these new accounts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's also important to circle back for a minute to what you said at the beginning, Nicola, because I agree with everything you said, but the distinction between gaming and esports. Only today, you know, Joe, I had a meeting with one of the larger marketing agencies in Amsterdam, and they asked us if we're also specialized in gaming, and I said no, it's just esports, and they couldn't really wrap their head around it, like, oh man, you know, you're doing esports, so you should probably also do gaming. But no, we actually very, very narrowly specialize in just esports and competitive gaming, and I think that's what's, you know, very largely distinguishes us from other agencies in the space. Between the three co-founders, we have about 15 years of experience in, you know, creating and deploying very complex communication strategies in esports, and that's almost, you know, as much as anyone can have in the industry. And I think, you know, with regards to that, there was also kind of an educational moment at the beginning, you know, 4 years ago when gaming press started to cover esports, or like yeah, big gaming outlets started to, you know, assign esports stories to the journalists. There was a lot of explaining and a lot of terminology and a lot of kind of fluency we had to pass on to people who were covering esports. So that was a great experience. Looking back, you know, we're 5 years later. It's been a lot of teaching, but it was a great ride.
Awesome. It doesn't really surprise me that you guys are still kind of running into that. What's the difference between gaming and esports slice of the conversation?
It's gotten much better.
It definitely has over the course of the last few years, but I do think that recently, just with, you know, the Fortnite impacts of kind of just opening up people's eyes to this industry, be it just with streaming or the huge prize pool tournaments that are put on after that, there's still pretty big responsibility on this industry to make that distinction.
I think so. I mean,
for new brands to step in.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But what's interesting to me is that when I started at Riot, for example, the conversation, at least in the early days, was very much around, you know, what makes a sport, right? Like, what are the basic tenets, and how does esports qualify, if at all? And now I'm actually quite relieved to see the conversation move on a little bit. Like you mentioned Fortnite, and I was thinking about Fortnite just this morning, and I think what Fortnite is doing is actually changing the conversation in a really interesting way, right? It's no longer about how best can you mimic, you know, sports structures like leagues and, you know, home games and away games and you know, various types of fandom. Like, although that's relevant for some sports, Fortnite is introducing a new discussion, right? Which is, where does the line between entertainment and competitive gaming lie?
Absolutely. Yeah.
To me, that's fascinating, right? Like, I think, you know, as we move forward in terms of storytelling about esports, we're starting to reclaim some of our identity, right? Because I think in the early days, you saw a lot of very slavish, like, we are just like you. You know, we have big games and we have leagues and we have stadiums and all of that stuff is great. But again, like, you know, competitive gaming isn't just about mimicking traditional sports. Competitive game, the reason we love it is because it's its own special, unique thing. You know, it doesn't really set a prescribed set of rules. So for us, as you know, as comms pros, we're actually at a really interesting stage.
Yeah, it's great to see, you know, the industry kind of switch from trying to find those comparisons between sports and other areas of entertainment, but also kind of stepping out and being proud of itself and in its uniqueness and just, you know, the unique ways that players, orgs, and fans actually engage with the titles that everyone plays. I really want to mine down more into the comms specific aspect of you guys representing teams and a variety of other organisations in esports. But I think one of the most important areas that I'd really like to learn more about is it's just around the timing of why you chose right here, right now, to make this play and to step away from safe and reputable roles in, you know, some of the biggest and most respected businesses in esports, especially if you include Bitcraft with the other founder, Kaylee, as well. How did you guys come together? What was the spark that lit the tinderbox for you to really make this move? Because I've been on that journey myself a few years back.
I think that, you know, as with anything, you get excited about opportunities for a variety of reasons, right? Because it's going to challenge you in some interesting way, because it's, you know, it brings something new into your life. Like so Anna and I went on holiday together maybe, what was it, 2 years ago, Anna?
2016, I think.
Yeah, okay. So we took it because, you know, we'd become close friends after working together on our various brands, and we took a holiday together to Iceland. And we started to have conversations about, like, you know, don't you wish, like, I, you know, I love what I do, but don't you wish that you could also do X? And, you know, don't you wish that you could also get more involved when it comes to, like, individual teams? Or, you know, wouldn't you be excited to work across a couple of different brands? And this was all sort of hypothetical. And then at some point, you know, I think one of us turned to the other and said, is there a reason why we're not doing this?
I actually just wanted to mention that I still have this WhatsApp conversation that we said, like, is there a reason we're not doing this? Wouldn't it be nice? And then I think you said, yeah, it would. And then we kind of parked it for a minute. We tabled it for a couple of weeks and then came back to it. And it started moving, you know, machine in the right direction. It took us a while, but I actually looked it up the other day to celebrate the anniversary of that trip.
I think what's helped is that, you know, we, like I said, we were pretty senior in what we did. We loved the companies that we worked for. But esports by its nature is still small enough and still collaborative enough that we've been able to keep a lot of the stuff that we enjoyed doing. And, you know, still being able to branch out into new areas. And ultimately, like, I want to be practical about this too. Like, there was, you know, some financial considerations. Like, this is a good year, you know, yeah. without being too blunt about it. This is a good year to be launching into the esports space with a startup that provides a service like we do. You've got a bunch of different teams, a bunch of different orgs that have entered the space, like, thanks to franchising, thanks to new leagues popping up. You have new games really starting to come to the fore. And I think this, of all years, felt like an amazing year to do it. Also, personally, I felt like I'd achieved certainly not everything I wanted to at Riot. Like, I look back and there's a million things I would have done differently, or a million things I was looking forward to doing had I continued. But I did, you know, big and significant things with the team there that I'm proud of. Launching, you know, the NALCS partnerships. You know, doing our first, our biggest worlds to date in China, which was, you know, a significant challenge on multiple fronts. It just felt like a really good moment to start to stretch into a new direction.
And we didn't, like, jump straight into it, right? It wasn't like, oh, there's this idea and 2 months later we're doing the story mob. No, Nicola wanted to, you know, finish a couple of things with Riot. I really wanted to do one last IEM with ESL. You know, IEM Katowice is the first event I've ever been to. It's very, very special to me. So I didn't want to walk away from that. I wanted to work on the Global Esports Forum with Intel and ESL. That was really important. So it took us a while to, like, actually just cut the ties. I think we both gave really, really long notices, but it was worth it. It was great.
That's a very respectful aspect of how I've seen a lot of pros leave a role that they're exceptionally passionate about to go and start a new opportunity. So I left my previous business to start LFG, which is the esports industry's first executive search consultancy, back in the back end of 2015. And that was like as the kind of rumbles for franchising were starting to come around. So one of the reasons why I've kind of been watching what you guys have been doing so closely is because like you're doing it at a completely new scale, like in comparison to LFG, but just seeing you attack a niche with such confidence and knowing it's pretty much just yours to fail with rather than whether you'll succeed or not, because there's such a strong kind of repertoire of expertise there. So it's really interesting.
It's really new to us too. Like I'm terrified every day, every single day. I'm the first time business owner, I think Nicola as well. Yeah. So it's also very, very new to us, but I think it's just a matter of getting up and doing it. At the end, we do love it and we do, you know, we are good at it. So it's just doing it.
We're also lucky to have some safety nets as well. Just to acknowledge, like, you know, we're in a relatively privileged position because we knew we'd be able to pick up clients from, you know, a lot of people that we've worked with for years. Even like my, you know, my relationship with Riot has evolved into being a partner. So it's, you know, it's the best divorce I've ever had, I think. So, you know, really like we're quite lucky and quite privileged that we didn't have to start from scratch into an industry where we had no, you know, established reputation.
Sure. And I'm sure that there are a few listeners out there that either have an idea for a proposition that they want to launch in this industry or want to step in or are already launching their own businesses or at least pitching a new project internally, maybe to educate people in their own business about the actual potential of esports. So what have been some of the learnings that you've taken in terms of mobilizing yourselves as a small team on a global basis, be it routine, mental, how do you structure, like what are some of the key focal points that allow you guys to be a successful team on such a small but also on such a wide basis with all the people you're working with?
I think for me personally, Nicola, I'm gonna take the first step here and please feel free if I, you know, to correct me, but I think for me personally it was just realizing what I really spend my time on and then knowing that Nicola is 9 hours behind me, so you know, organizing my day in such a way that I can spend most time with her and most time with Kaylee was very crucial. You know, also knowing what your time sinks are. Like I can spend, you know, 3 hours writing that copy for the blog post, but I know Nicola can do it in 20 minutes. So recognizing what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are and arranging, you know, making that arrangement internally that you all pick up what you're best at. I think that was a really important learning for me.
Yeah, I'd say that's the case. I mean, in my case, like I think this actually holds a lot of people back from launching their own business. I was terrified of the admin that goes into launching a business, right? Especially especially with us, because you know we're an international business right from the get-go. We have employees now in multiple different countries. We're, you know, extremely admin heavy because we travel to support clients, that kind of thing. So I was absolutely terrified of that. But luckily, you know, we've managed to find a great blend, I think, between us and between Kaylee and ourselves of people that can manage, you know, the different aspects of the business. So that's definitely been a big help. So I, you know, you need to go into business with people you trust, but also people who aren't just replicas of yourself. If there were three of me, we'd be dead in the water because
there would never be any expenses done.
So yeah, it would be poor in multiple ways.
But that goes for everybody, right? Like I know I can rely on Nicola and on Kaylee on stuff for stuff that I myself can't do. I've learned that in a couple of months already. So very thankful for that learning as well.
So it's more around kind of just being humble enough and honest with yourself to understand your strengths and weaknesses and finding the right people to partner up with. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and I kind of wish that I'd brought more people on earlier on who actually shared the same vision as me, because perhaps there would have been a more well-rounded proposition. But I'm not exactly complaining with where I've ended up. So that's really interesting, just to really mine down into how people mold and actually change themselves to make the most of new opportunities. That's awesome. Let's dive back into the detail. As you've already mentioned, the esports industry is rapidly evolving. How do you see the state of esports comms right now, and where do you see the most opportunity, and what are you most excited to see change in this industry with regards to how brands, teams, orgs, leagues, and publishers speak about themselves publicly?
Ah, that's a big question. So I think that you're seeing orgs now, like it, I think in the last 2 to 3 years, there's been so much building the airplane in the air, right? Like orgs are just sort of figuring out how to go from like small passionate teams to, you know, global organizations with communication strategies that fit that. So for me, it's been about sort of managing them through that change, right? Like, so for example, if you're working for, I don't know, the LA Dodgers or, I don't know, Arsenal or whoever, right? This is a company that has a, not just sort of a one-year brand plan or a how do we get through the next tournament, but they have, you know, mission and vision and values that inform everything that they do, that, you know, have been sort of carefully honed over years. And we're just at the beginning of that process. But what we're starting to see from orgs now is that they want to get to that level, right? They want to be, you know, fully formed brands who are known for various values, and they want help in helping to articulate that. And I think that's probably where we come in with the most strength, because we are able to understand their core audience really well, but we're also able to look beyond it and to figure out, you know, how do you become this long-lasting brand? Because now you're spending millions, right, on leagues that mean that you're going to be around not just for 1 year, not for 5 years, but at least for like 10. So how do you, you know, come up with like a really robust communication strategy and a team to execute it that allow you to do that?
I think to zoom in a little bit on that, it's worth adding that I've also noticed that change with the players specifically. So players became much more aware of the value of their personal brand and what it means to be attached to a valuable organization, to a famous organization. So, you know, they're starting to understand that there's a difference between they speak on behalf of the organization and when there's a difference between you know, them speaking on their own behalf. So players have started to realize that what they say carries a lot of weight, and what they say is actually valuable, and people do want to listen and people are interested. So there was also that educational moment where people go, oh, it matters, you know, I should probably think this through.
Yeah, it's no longer a small niche. It's more, these players are now a brand in their own right, as well as representing their own teams and organizations. So, I mean, we've seen a small minority of hiccups from pro players either. I assume many esports titles, especially in the Overwatch League, there were a few that were more specifically targeted towards one of our players in the Outlaws earlier on in the season, and multiple streamers, you know, dropping the ball in one way or another. I mean, if you're always on, if you're always in front of your audience, that there will be mistakes. But I guess it's a healthy evolution for players to kind of take that more seriously and view themselves as a product as well as a person.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also as role models, right? Like they
absolutely
have a ton of fans who look up to them, who admire them. Everything they say and do carries a lot of weight. So, you know, them realizing that is really, really good development.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's still one or two times when I meet certain players from our teams when I'm like, okay, you're a business professional, you don't have to be, you know, nervous of meeting someone who you watch and you love to watch. That's great. For the publisher side, looking at new titles and also maybe adjusting messaging more specifically towards an esports audience, we're seeing a lot of these AAA publishers stepping in to make an esports play or kind of bolting it onto their pre-existing IP. Do you guys have any caution about that in terms of, I mean, I just look back at the Fortnite press release on a Nintendo Switch and I kind of cringe at seeing how that was put together. Is there any reservations that you have or any learnings that you'd like to pass over to publishers that are looking to add an esports or a high level competitive gaming avenue into their titles? Is there anything you'd like to change?
So, I mean, I think that the old wisdom here remains the case, right? Where that an esport isn't necessarily created, it's born, right? So, League is a good example, and obviously I'd say League because of my years at Riot, but League is a good example of a game that was identified by the community as like super fun to play competitively and super fun to watch. And then naturally that became, you know, an esport because of that core belief, right? That I'm going to have a good time if I watch somebody else play it. And it was certainly developed as a sport, but the, you know, the esports part of it was given time in the community to kind of define itself. And what I think you see these days is a lot of people not skipping that step, but certainly rushing that step, right? So making a lot of effort to really brand a game as an esport before the community has had time to play it and agree, right? So I'm still pretty old school in that I believe that a community needs time to really claim a game as an esport before you start applying, you know, franchises and international leagues and that kind of thing. I think, you know, the strongest stuff comes from like this core belief that it's super fun to watch.
Yeah, it's hard for me to see that point being as true these days, just because the gamer is so, I mean, it's obviously very important for your fan base to love the game and I want to play it and I want to scale up through the ranks to be the best and then therefore to watch the best play at the highest level. But I feel like it's very hard to have that patience with an audience at the moment just because the attention span is so short and so fleeting. Maybe it's more the standard of release for having a structure that's in place, not necessarily with franchising, but at least a well-versed internal kind of fan attention system where they scale up and there is ranked matchmaking of a high standard and all of these kind of features. Maybe we're just setting the bar higher for what an esports title actually needs to be these days just because there are such established markets.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But I mean, I would say that releasing a game, you know, and hoping it's going to be an esport, that doesn't mean that you just sit back and do nothing, right? There's a ton of space between that and sort of this high level, you know, multi-million league that we're seeing. That, you know, I think Fortnite is doing some interesting stuff in this space, right? When it comes to community support, they're sort of turning the paradigm a little bit, away from teams, which I think has both pluses and minuses. But I think that there's a ton that you can do in terms of like grassroots activity that allow you to build, like help build a community while you're testing the waters on some of the bigger pieces. So, yeah, I mean, I think it would be naive to say that any game that, you know, takes years of development and a ton of people working on it is going to launch and just be like, I don't know, let's see if they like it. Like, there'll be a plan for it. Like when Riot, you know, release their new game, if it feels like it's going to have an esports bent, they'll have been a plan from the beginning. It's just a question of how you roll that plan out.
I mean, I've just been blown away by looking at the Ubisoft case study of sadly launching games half finished, but then staying 100% all in with the titles such as Rainbow Six and also now with For Honor as well, which looks like it might have some form of competitive aspect to it launching in a month or so. Mm-hmm. Looking at how the publisher, obviously after a mistake, has kept with it and has built, you know, one of the fastest growing esports propositions in the West. I mean, Rainbow Six, it's a perfect combination between two things that everyone loves, which is FPSs and MOBAs, and it's got the kind of slower paced aspect to really hit on the CSGO audience and also I would assume the older FPS audience too. So it's quite interesting to see how there are so many different routes to building an esport. If it's overnight success and Fortnite and therefore like throwing budget at events just to make sure that the in-game player base stays engaged, or if it's the Ubisoft model where it's kind of haphazardly stumbling into it, but
I mean,
staying committed or if it's the visionary aspect with Riot.
To bring it back to communications, which obviously is our MO, like I think it all comes down to, you know, how you manage that journey from a communication standpoint, right? Like how you talk to the community, even in development, about growing an esport and the support that that needs and that kind of thing. So I, for us, like, we don't tend to work, to be honest with you, with like newer or establishing esports. We tend to work, at least now, very much more in the space of more well-established esports. But, you know, it's our hope that as we grow and as we learn, that we're able to help orgs and particularly publishers navigate that journey. Because there's, as you mentioned earlier, there's a ton of potholes just waiting to swallow you up.
Yeah, and obstacles to overcome. I 100% agree. Anna, is there anything else that you'd like to add on there?
Not at all. She nailed it.
No, you awesome. Cool. There's one other topic that I did want to ask your opinion on while we have you here on the show, and obviously thank you very much for being here. There's been a lot of negative PR around Riot specifically, with reports coming out of mispractice in the workplace and unsavory working conditions for female employees. How would you take a temperature reading of the esports industry with regards to representation for women specifically, and your experiences with that in a senior leadership position? Because you guys being in senior positions with ESL and Riot, that puts you in a very, very small percentage of female operators in this industry.
Sure. So yeah, it's a very polite intro to this topic. I think that both Anna and Kaylee and I agree that, you know, even though we're proud to be a female founded company, hopefully, being female in this space is sort of the least interesting thing about us, right? Like, we hire, you know, with an eye on diversity, but at the same time, what I think what marks us out is the fact that we have significant experience in this space. So,
of course,
with that said, I think, as with any industry that's growing at the speed of light, there's going to be these kind of issues. Addressing my personal time at Riot, which obviously you were too polite to ask, but happy to chat through. Although I didn't personally experience, you know, a lot of the things that have been described, that doesn't negate the fact that they happened. And I do believe the tales that are coming out. I think what happens at Riot, equivalent to what happens, I assume, at a number of other gaming industries, is that sort of unintentionally, as an industry, we tend to put a lot of emphasis on personality traits that come easier to guys, right? Not 100%, but on balance tend to come easier to guys. Like, have I been interrupted in a meeting? Sure. You know, have I sort of downplayed my own achievements while somebody else crows about, you know, each and every little thing that they achieve? Definitely. Do I feel like that's held me back in a gaming environment? Hard to say. What I do think is that if you prioritize those personality traits, then the intention is not necessarily sexist, right? You're just sort of trying to preserve a unique culture, but the outcome is probably going to be sexist, because you're going to, you know, unintentionally discount some of the people within your organization that don't fulfill that, you know, that particular box. So okay. To me, it's less about gender diversity and more about how do we, as an organization, and by organization, I mean the entire esports industry, how do we make sure that, you know, the people that are speaking aren't just the people who shouted the loudest? Do you know what I mean? Like, how do we make sure that it's the smartest people, that it's the, you know, the most experienced people, and that we're not, you know, not discounting that? Like, Anna and I have both, you know, obviously in our multi-year careers experienced things where, you know, we were discounted for reasons that we may have not understood at the time. But what's important to us now and as part of this company is that we have a really strong sense of who we are moving forward. Like, what are the skills that we bring? What are our personality styles? And how does that create the best possible result?
Yeah, that was very well put. I think my situation was really unique at ESL, because I believe I was the first female hired on the executive team. back in 2014, there was only one other lady on the team. She was the agile manager. And I very quickly got promoted. I very consequently got, you know, from one position to another. So I was there very, very prominently. I'm a very assertive person. I'm very outgoing. I sometimes am loud. I sometimes can be annoying. That's true. Are those traits unique to me? Not really. Are those traits unique to just men or women? Also not. Also, I don't think, you know, to Nicola's point, I have downplayed my achievements. Also, I have allowed people to interrupt me in meetings. Also, I have, you know, walked out and gotten a coffee when someone asked me because somebody thought that I wasn't in the meeting or wasn't supposed to be in the meeting. It's now I look at, you know, back at this 3 years ago, it's funny. But are those things unique to gaming and esports? No. You go to any other big multinational company, things like that happen. I think what's really, really important is to remember what you learn from it. And again, to Nicola's point, 4.5 years at, you know, the world's largest esports company have really, really taught me very well about things that I've been very, very good at and things that I should improve on and things that I should pursue and things that I should drop. So that has been an incredible experience that I wish anyone could have, you know, that kind of exploration journey. I think that's important for your development.
And it might maybe unfair of me to ask this question, but we've identified areas where we'd like to see some change. But are there any examples of a roadmap that you would like to be seen put in place in either one team or one business or one area of the market? Is there anything that you would like to be seen done more? I mean, we as Infinite have grown exceptionally rapidly over the course of the last 9 months to around 200 staff, including our players, and we have a super open dialogue about people's experiences in the office, even if, you know, they have been interrupted without someone realizing what that really does or what that represents. So are there any roadmaps or any examples of what you'd like to see be done differently?
We spend a lot of time thinking about it, haven't we, Nicola?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, one of the things that we're really passionate about and wanted to do at the StoryMob is just simply, very simply, give back. So we were toying with an idea of starting a mentorship program where we can, you know, apply what we've learned to a more structured, more organized kind of course that can hopefully help other women. There's a couple of ways we can do it. I just don't think we're there yet.
I mean, for me, I think it's about training people to be good managers. Right. Yeah. Like, I don't think a lot of people, like, and this is no criticism, because esports has grown so quickly that people have been elevated into positions because of pure talent. Right. And I think we tend to neglect the side of, you know, a traditional work environment that says, here's how, you know, here's how you treat the people that work for you. Here's how you deal with concerns. Here's how you're careful about their career management and making sure
100%
that you're pushing them
agree.
Forward. So, really, I mean, and the best teams, I'm actually really proud to be working with the teams that we are working with, because they are really thinking about that stuff, right? They're studying like management principles and really training their guys to be, you know, like execs, not just, you know, the best sort of player manager or the best tournament organizer or that kind of thing. So I think it all just comes down to education. And for what it's worth, like, I think the outpouring of support over the past couple of weeks, especially since the Riot story, to me just demonstrates that there's a lot of people out there that care pretty deeply and that want to see change happen and are just looking for guidance on the best way.
Yeah. I just really wish there was an initiative that actually, you know, stood up and did something, you know, not don't put together another panel. We already, you know what the service is. It would be really, really nice to have people actually getting out there and putting those programs together and talking to those women and helping them and making a tangible change. That's something what Nicola and I have been discussing quite a lot.
I 100% agree with that. You know, just looking at the esports labor market in terms of people that have been not at the right place at the right time, but have a very specific skill set, be it management, be it being in at the early days of the esports partnerships, marketing, any area of the esports business. They don't necessarily have that kind of long history in larger working environments where they have those skills down. So that's an awesome point. One last question just before we look to close up here, but the female competitive scene in esports, I cannot bring myself on either side of the fence, whether I think that female-only leagues are a good way forward to at least give female teams the stage, presence and experience to then move into mixed rosters, or if we should be looking to push more mixed rosters into esports. How do you view the current state of this, and are there any examples of what you'd like to see be done differently here?
I would say, as a disclaimer, I don't think we're the best people to address this, right? Given that, you know, neither Anna nor I are at the stage where we can compete professionally in any of the games that we enjoy playing. Because
no, 100%. I'm just asking you as human beings.
But, yeah.
Hey, I've seen before.
That's true. Although it's hard to say, I would say that, you know, I believe in inclusive spaces, right, for the most part. Like, I believe in giving, you know, groups that for one reason or another have found entry into esports or into gaming a more solid pathway, a good thing. I am not sure in the long run how female-only leagues impact the, you know, the entry of women into high-level competitive gaming. I'm not sure that anybody is, right? I think that female leagues fulfill a lot of different things. They create an inclusive space. As you said, they give experience. They're also, let's face it, right, they're red-hot marketing things because, you know, people love to think about female gamers. The question is, does this, in the long run, create a pathway to seeing more women at the very top of competitive gaming? I'm not sure.
I think something like that starts at home and, like, primary and secondary schools, right? When your teachers and your parents tell you, hey, you know, you like gaming, you enjoy esports, that's probably something you could be doing in life. And that's very typically still labeled as gaming, at least it's very typically still labeled as a boy activity versus girls activity. Mm. So I genuinely think that to increase female participation in competitive gaming, we have to increase the level of access and the level of acceptance of gaming and esports as something that women can do too. That's something that women can have a career in. And that it's not, I don't think it can be solved with a female-only league. I'm agreeing with Nicola. I don't think we have an answer. I don't think the industry has an answer yet.
It's the best short-term solution that I've seen, and by no means long-term. Just really interesting to hear your thoughts on that. Well, I think that's probably an interesting point for us to look to close out the show on. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your experiences. Before I let you go, I've just got one or two more personal pieces to dive into with you. Open these questions up to both of you, but have you had any mentors in this space, and what's the best piece of advice that you've both received? And I'm going to say that you can't say it's each other.
That would be
the cheap answer.
I was very, very lucky to have a really good mentor for the last 2 years at ESL. Jette Negard Andersen, who is the CEO at MTG, kind of took me under her wings. And actually the biggest learning she passed on to me is that you have to define and really accept your strengths, even if your strengths are things that make other people comfortable. That was my biggest learning.
So I was lucky when I joined, actually the guy who recruited me into Riot, his name is Vlad Koho. He was really instrumental in my growth, specifically because he was a bit of an iconoclast, right? Like we challenged pretty much everything and we tore up ideas and started from the beginning. And that to me was a real revelation because I'd come from, you know, traditional brands where everything moved forward and you didn't really allow yourself to think big picture all that much. Not to suggest that I was like a robot, but you know, he really helped in that sense. So to me, it just became about examining things that I'd assumed were the case.
Interesting. And do you both hold a motto close to your heart? Is there anything that you live and die by? Is there anything
I've been thinking about
for your business or you as individuals?
I wouldn't really say I have a motto. I would love it if I did. I think what sort of tends to mark me out as an individual is I'm the most comfortable when I'm uncomfortable, if that makes sense. Like I tend to get very antsy when I feel too comfortable, too grounded. That started when I was like 17. I went to India by myself. Like I'm much happier when I'm somehow unsettled, challenged, unhappy, and frightened in some significant way, which sounds weird, but I think is what encouraged me to your point earlier to like take a leap with this business, because I'm, you know, pretty terrified every day, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, not at all. I mean, it's all about being fluid, and you know, the moment that you start to stagnate, that's when you either overanalyze things or you know, you start to see the cracks. So I'm 100% with you. With always be challenged, Anna.
I actually wish I could say something really profound right now, but I was thinking about your question today. And actually, you know, when I left ASL, my team gave me a framed poster with like top 10 things I used to say. And actually, like, none of them are suitable to repeat on podcast. So I'm going to go with, I don't have one. I think mine is a combination of things, but I try to do two things. I try to approach every situation in life, every person I meet from a place of empathy. When I give myself enough time to do that. And the second thing is that I really believe in hard work. I believe in that people who put in the effort will get the results. I believe in grinding. I believe in getting up every morning and doing the thing you have to do. And, you know, that's just the road to success, I think. And I really try to do this every day.
Empathy is the most important skill set in the workplace, yeah. I believe. So 100% agree with everything you guys just outlined. I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Esports Roundtable podcast. Nicola and Anna, thank you so much for your time. How can everyone reach out to you if they want to get in touch, if they want to share any thoughts or questions?
Best place is to go to thestorymob.com or follow us on Twitter. We're real Twitter heads, so we'll get back to you if there's anything you need.
Yep.
What are the ats on Twitter?
At thestorymob. Okay. Yeah, that reaches all of us nice and easy.
Fantastic. Cool. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Esports Roundtable podcast. Thank you all very much for tuning in. Join us next week when we have more awesome esports insight. And if you want to stay in touch with us, it's at ES Roundtable Pod on Twitter. Or if you want to get at me, it's at Barely Qualified. All right, guys. Thank you so much for the time, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks.